She pointed at the dead coachman. They'll kill anyone who tries.
Oh, they will they?
Roald sneered, his face contorted with contempt.
We will just see about that.
He stormed down the hallway towards the brightly lit courtyard. The other guests and some of the servants followed after him.
It's just possible the pompous knob will make them back down, Birnger said to Magda.
She looked over at Hiltruda and Liebgarda.
Maybe he'll get his family out, Magda said, but he couldn't care less about what happens to the rest of us.
There was too much truth in Magda's observation for Birnger to argue with her. The flicker of hope that had been there only a moment before evaporated. As the procession neared the end of the corridor, a harsh voice shouted above the general murmur.
You there! That is far enough! No one's leaving Murghast!
Roald stiffened at the challenge.
You dare address me in that tone, dog? I am Baron Roald von Vernher.
His head back, his shoulders set, he brazenly marched towards the entrance. Birnger braced himself for the crack of a gun. Instead, there was the sharp hiss of a bow loosing an arrow. Roald cried out as a feathered shaft struck his hand, piercing it just behind his thumb. The arrowhead emerged from his palm, blood spraying from the wound. The Baron staggered back and waved his other hand in submission.
I'm going back! I'm going back! He cried.
So much for the privileges of rank, Lothar remarked as the injured Roald retreated towards him.
Fanatics!
Roald cursed. He held his injured hand so Hiltruda could see it.
When we leave here, I will have every one of them strung up by their thumbs and fed to the carrion crows.
Hiltruda gave the injury a brief glance.
Is there someone who could do something about this? I don't want my husband dripping all over my dress.
The elf tried to help Otto, one of the valets suggested, clearly remembering things differently than Birnger did.
Mention of Nashala had Birnger looking around for her. He cried out an alarm when he finally saw her. While everyone else was looking at Roald, she had started down the corridor towards the courtyard. His cry made no difference to Nashala, but it did draw her son's notice.
Mother! Abraham shouted. Come back, they will shoot you!
Nashala kept advancing, her gown of living gold rippling about her slender body.
Preposterous, she said. They would not dare.
Birnger grabbed hold of Abraham before he could race after his mother. He swung around and tried to wrench free of Birnger's grip. There was a steely strength in the elf's slim arm that surprised Birnger. He surprised the elf when his fist smacked Abraham's chin and dropped him senseless to the floor.
By Grungid beard, Alric growled. Tullius is going to pull it off.
Birnger and the others watched as Nashala marched past the spot where Roald had been shot. As she advanced, the dazzling glow of torches retreated ahead of her. He could now see something of the nature of the men in the courtyard. The uniforms of Free Guild soldiers, the habits of Sigmarite monks, the coarse tunics of labourers and the colourful doublets of burghers. All of the men gave ground before the stern elf, their faces drawn with superstitious dread. Pistols and crossbows were lowered as the mob backed away. Then, from behind the mob, a strident voice called out,
"Hold your ground! Do not retreat before evil!"
The speaker pushed his way to the fore of the crowd. He was arrayed in white robes edged in gold, and upon his head was a silver mitre with a badge displaying the twin-tailed comet. In one hand, he held a massive warhammer, in the other, a ponderous tome. He raised both in the air as he addressed the faltering mob.
"Are your convictions so feeble that you balk at what must be done?"
the warrior priest shouted.
"Do you fear an elf's curse more than the threat that now hangs over all of Ravensback? Would you let the demons slip free to slaughter your families in their beds?
He swung the hammer around and pointed it at the castle.
Withdraw into Murghast. The taint of evil is upon the place, and we will allow none touched by it to leave.
Nishala stopped just outside the entry.
The evil conjugations of madmen are of no concern to elves, Grand Lector Sigard. There is no taint of sorcery upon either myself or my son.
She took another step towards the crowd.
Each of us has dwelt in your holy city of Azerheim. Are you so audacious as to suggest any corruption could strike us low?
The words made an impact on the crowd. Uncertainty rippled through them. Only Sigard was unfazed. The warrior priest stood his ground.
If what you say is true, withdraw into the castle, Sigard declared. No harm can befall you there if you are immune to the kiss of chaos and the claws of the demon. The acolytes of the temple are scouring the records for a rite of exorcism that can break this foul enchantment. Abide within the castle until we can be certain.
Nishala glared at Sigard.
Impertinence, she snapped. You would dare try to restrain me?
She started towards the warrior priest, and a shot suddenly rang out. The elf stumbled back as a bullet slammed into her chest. Then a second bullet struck her, and a third. By the time her body wilted to the ground, she had been hit 5 times. As life ebbed from her, a soldier with a pike came forwards and rolled her back into the castle.
No one will leave Murghast,
Sigard vowed.
We have been warned. We have been told of the abominable horror that walks within those halls. It will not break free. It will not threaten Ravensback.
Berger looked at Magda.
Warned? Who could have warned them?
A moment later, Berger had his answer. 2 monks emerged from the crowd, each holding the end of a rope. They were connected to a collar locked around the neck of a third man. Berger recognised him as the Count's majordomo. The monks drew close to the entrance and jerked the ropes. Goswin was sent stumbling forwards. As he moved past them, the monks released their ropes and let the man fall prone across Nashala's body.
All who have been exposed to this evil must be cleansed, Sigard pronounced. Not a trace of this corruption can be allowed to escape.
Goswin scrambled away from the entrance and fled down the corridor while shots rang out behind him. As he reached the guests, Bruno caught hold of the errant majordomo.
So that's what happened to you, Bruno snarled. Went slinking off to tell Grand Lector Sigard what your master was plotting.
No, I only tried to get away, Goswin protested.
He clutched at his shoulder where one of the bullets had struck him. Rold fixed the majordomo with a murderous stare.
I'll get the truth out of you if I have to peel every inch of skin from your hide. You'll tell us all about the Count's plot against us.
Thilo Krebs and Rayna helped Bruno drag Goswin away. Rold nodded to Lothar.
You're the nearest thing to a healer we have. Come along and see that the cur doesn't die before I find out what I want to know.
As the guests and servants began to file back down the corridor, Berger looked for someone to help him carry the stunned Abraham. It was then he noticed Magda creeping towards the courtyard. He hurried after her.
What are you doing? Berger demanded.
Magda twisted from his grip. She didn't try to move any closer, but she did shout to the men in the courtyard.
Please, someone. Someone who can hear me, find Kluger. Tell him that Magda Hausler is in here. Magda Hausler, Kluger!
The only answer to her shouts was the indistinct murmur of the crowd. Berger coaxed her back down the corridor.
They won't listen, he said. They won't help.
If Sigurd can figure out a way, they'd rather burn down Murghast and everyone in it. Kluger can help, Magda said, her voice low, as though she were afraid to hear the desperation bound to her words. If only they would get word to him. Kluger could help. Birger eased Magda back down the hallway. She helped him pick up Abraham when they reached the unconscious elf.
Who is Kluger?
He asked as they started after the others. How can he help? Magda only answered the first question. Perhaps even she was afraid to answer the second.
Kluger is a member of the Order of Azir, she said.
A witch hunter.
Chapter 4 Roald decided that the parlour just off the main hallway was suitable enough for the affair at hand. He recalled it from previous visits to Murghast. The room was spacious, pleasantly appointed, with expensive oak panels on the walls and thick rugs on the floors. More importantly, it had a hearth. The Baron had need of that hearth right now. The guests filed into the parlour, bearing Goswin along with them. Roald pointed to one of the heavy chairs, and the majordomo was forced down into the seat. Then he motioned to Bruno and indicated that he should start a fire.
You will save us all a lot of time and unpleasantness if you just tell us what we want to know, Roald said as he paced between Goswin and the hearth. Right now, you perhaps think you won't say anything, but I assure you that you will.
Notker shook his head, a look of anguish on his face.
Surely there is another way, he pleaded.
Don't fret over this brat,
Hartman snarled, pointing to the majordomo.
Any moment that thing could possess one of our children. Burn him down to the bone. Make him talk.
Siguna stifled a scream and drew her children close to her.
Sigma, preserve us.
For the first time, Goswin seemed to appreciate the grisly import of the fire Bruno was stoking. Colour fled from his visage, and sweat began to bead across his brow. He glanced around, his eyes imploring the others in the room. Even the servants who had followed them into the parlour displayed little sympathy for the majordomo.
If he can tell us anything about Count Wolfsieg's plot, then we need to hear it, Inga stated. It's not a question of only our survival, but that of our children as well, she added, looking over at Magda.
It is my family that moves me to be ruthless, Roald explained,
gesturing to Hiltruda and Liebgarda.
For myself, I might take a risk, but I will take no chances with those most dear to me.
From the corner of his eye, he watched his wife and daughter. Of course, Liebgarda was impressed with his show of concern, the spoiled idiot. But there was no change in emotion from the Baroness.
Can we trust anything revealed by torture? Birger asked.
Abraham was sprawled across a divan, and the youth was standing over the elf as though seeking to do penance for knocking him senseless.
The witch hunters trust it enough, Lothar pointed out.
Then a cynical smile appeared.
Of course a man will say most anything if he thinks it will stop the pain.
Goswin swung around and nodded emphatically at the alchemist.
I'll tell you whatever you want to know. There's no need to do anything.
Roald picked an iron poker from the rack beside the hearth and thrust it into the flames.
Make me believe you, he said. Convince me that I won't need to put this against your hide.
He tapped the end of the poker with his finger, his eyes fixed upon Goswin's. Hiltruda opened the interrogation.
Those men in the courtyard, you brought them?
Goswin nodded.
I was carrying out the Count's command. He said I was to inform the Sigmarite priest that a demon had been set loose in Murghast, that it was trying to find a body to act as its host.
He looked across the guests, searching for anyone who would show him sympathy.
I was to tell them that the demon would go amok in the streets of Ravensback if it escaped the castle.
But that's not why Count Wolfsieger conjured it, Magda interrupted. He claimed it was called up for revenge. Revenge against all of us. Roald stormed over to Goswin's chair, towering over the man.
Well, how do you explain that? Were you privy to what the Count was planning?
I only know what I was told to tell the priests, Goswin said. I don't know what else.
That would be a lie,
Ulrich snorted. He jabbed his thumb at the majordomo.
It were you who spouted that rigmarole when you were showing everybody where to sit.
He nodded at Lothar.
That smacked of wizardry, according to those who know a bit about such things.
Make him talk before the demon comes,
Hartmann demanded, his eyes darting to his children.
Have him tell us how to stop it.
Roald ignored the merchant and leaned close to Goswin.
Lies, he hissed venomously into his ear. Do you really think you are in a position to deceive me? The question of how much I have to hurt you really depends on how much I believe you. But perhaps you would rather start over.
Yes, yes, I admit it. Count Wolfsieg told me exactly what to say when I brought each of you to the table.
Goswin's voice rose to a ragged squeal.
I didn't know there was importance. I didn't know what he was planning.
Notko walked to the majordomo, his son following close behind him. The former priest glared at Goswin. You had to know, he said. You have served the Count long enough to know the significance of that hellish rune on those plates. Goswin cringed back into the chair, but only for a moment. A crafty look crept into his eyes.
Perhaps I do know what you're saying, he said.
He looked around at the other guests and then back at Notka.
Would you like me to tell everyone how, as you say, I have been in Murgast a very long time?
Roald drove his fist into Goswin's face and knocked the majordomo back.
Damn your plotting, your car!
The Baron wiped his bruised knuckles on the fabric of the chair.
You'll talk to me? You'll tell me what I want to know? Make him talk fast,
Hartmann whined. Roald glanced over at the frantic merchant, then at the rest of the guests. The last thing any of them needed was Hartman's reminder about the doom hanging over them.
Talk!
He demanded, raising his fist to strike Goswin again.
Yes, your lordship,
Goswin said as he wiped blood from his bruised mouth. He gestured at Notka.
The Count, he brought Volkoin back after he'd been discharged from Murgast 15 years ago. I escorted him around the castle. I led him. No. He led me to places that had been...
Notka started to grab at Goswin. Roald intervened and held the former priest back. Despite his age, Notka was intent on getting hold of the majordomo.
Help me!
Roald snapped at the other guests.
The old fool has gone mad!
Bruno and Berger hurried to the aid of the Baron. Each took hold of an arm and dragged the cleric back. Rainer lunged at the two men who had seized his father. Berger sent him stumbling away with a punch to the nose.
Talk!
Roald ordered Goswin. He pointed at the enraged Notka.
Talk, or I'll let the priest loose.
Goswin nodded.
I'll tell. Notka came here to remove the protective wards, the seals that were left by the stormcasts when the old von Kurtburgs helped them take the fortress from the barbarians.
Of course, Lothar said. Sigmar's crusaders would ensure that any lingering traces of chaos could do no harm. The right wards would have sanctified Murghast, inoculated the castle, as it were, against corruption.
He directed a withering look at Notka.
To remove such protection would be necessary to summon a demon. It would need a priest or a man who had been a priest to effectively commit such blasphemy.
Notka stopped struggling against his captors.
He hung his head in shame. I didn't know why the Count wanted the wards removed. It was 15 years ago, and I was desperate for money. The Count paid me well.
You knew it could only be for some malignant purpose that someone would ask for such a thing, Rold said. A priest above anyone else would know this.
I thought... Notka looked over to where Reiner stood with his hand across his face and blood streaming from his nose. I thought the Count was trying to use magic to speak with his son's spirit. After the way I'd failed Hagen, I felt obligated to do what I could, even if it was blasphemous. A scream drowned out whatever else Notka might have said. Rold turned to Inga. She screamed again and pointed a quivering hand towards Reiner.
His eyes! His eyes!
In their shock, Bruno and Berger relaxed their grip on Notka. The old priest broke away from them and rushed to Reiner. He pulled the shielding hand away from his son's face, then he backed away in stark terror.
Sigmar's mercy!
Rold swore as he looked upon Reiner's face. The man's nose was a gory mess from Berger's punch, but it wasn't half as terrible as the eyes. The Baron could well understand Inga's scream. The eyes had turned completely crimson, no pupil or iris, just two pools of blood.
The demon!
Ottokar backed away from Reiner and grabbed Magda with his good arm, pulling her along with him as he retreated across the room.
The demon's inside him.
Reiner's expression became one of utter horror. He clutched at his face, trying to feel the disfiguration that had provoked such fear. A tremor rushed through him, every muscle in his body writhing in the same instant. Somehow he remained standing as the seizure passed. His face was contorted in an agony of terror. A horrible groan slobbered up from his throat when he tried to speak, a sound that had no kinship with anything human.
Get him!
Rold ordered. The Baron made no move to act upon his own command. Bruno and Berger started towards Reiner, while two of the valets came at him from behind.
No, it's not me! It's not me!
Reiner shouted in a voice that seemed to claw its way up from some echoing pit. He fled before the advancing Volkenhorsts. In his retreat, he collided with one of the valets. A slap from Reiner sent the servant flying as though he'd been kicked by a gargant. He slammed into the parlour wall and slid to the floor, his skull fractured by the impact. A ghastly sob of horror rippled from Reiner's mouth as he looked down in shock at the dead man.
Don't let him get away!
Rold thundered. It was already too late. Only the servant stood between Reiner and the hallway. After what had happened to the valet, none of them dared stand in Reiner's path. They scrambled to step aside as the possessed man hurtled past them and into the castle's dark corridors.
After him!
Rold pulled Goswin out of the chair and pushed him towards the door. He swept his gaze across the other guests.
We can't let him get away!
Hartmann shook his head and sank down onto a divan.
I'm not going to chase after that thing.
He nodded at the trembling Notka.
It's his problem. If his son is possessed, the demon will come looking for him, not me.
Bruno glared at the merchant.
You sit aside and let that happen. Let his own son come back to kill him.
Right now, the demon is weak, Lothar said. It has not completely taken over its host. It is vulnerable.
On your feet, Rold ordered. We have to get Reiner before he can...
Inga cried out and rushed over to the Baron.
You can't kill him. You mustn't. Her eyes were imploring Rold.
When she found no sympathy there, she looked to Hiltruder for support.
Don't you understand? If you kill Reiner, the demon will seek out another host, another of our children.
She's right, Lothar said. If we kill the host, only the host dies. The demon will prevail.
Alric slammed his fist into his palm.
Then we just Catch him! Catch him and lock him up so the demon can't get out!
Rold nodded in agreement.
Find Rayna and catch him, he told the rest. Under no circumstances must he be harmed.
We can search a larger area if we split up, Thilo suggested.
The servants know the castle better than any of us, Berger said, pointing to them. They were just inside the parlour now, talking in lowered voices with Goswin. The menials seemed uncertain whether to stay or withdraw into the corridor.
You there, Rold snapped at them. Your lives are in jeopardy as much as ours are. Help us find Rayna, and we may be able to get that mob to let us leave Murghast.
He felt his temper fray when his speech was met with sullen stares.
It wasn't a request, he said.
Rold began splitting the servants and the guests into small hunting parties, each charged with a different section of the castle.
Someone should stay with the elf,
Hartman suggested, pointing at the still senseless Abraham.
My wife can look after him, Lothar said.
He motioned to the listless Saskia and guided her over to the elf. She sat beside him with detached indifference, barely glancing at her charge.
There is another problem, Lothar told Rold.
He indicated Notka, who was almost as listless as the alchemist's wife.
He may as well stay here, Rold said. He's no good to anyone this way.
You'd be wrong there,
Ulrich pulled at his long beard as he continued.
Seems to me, but whoever takes the priest along stands as good a chance of finding his son.
Ulrich laid his hand on Notka's shoulder and guided him to join the group the Duardin was leading.
You see, the rest of you will just be looking for the demon, but us, with the priest along, well, while we're looking for it, it'll be looking for us.
The halls of Murghast felt as though they were closing in around Magda, tightening around her like the coil of a noose. The servants were lighting each lamp and candle they passed as their group navigated the dark corridors, but illumination did little to offset the gloom. The dark iron walls sucked all the warmth from the light, leaving it as chill as grave wisps flickering over a cemetery. Magda berated herself for her morbid imaginings. The situation was dire enough without populating the castle with phantoms. Her fingers tightened around the old falchion she'd removed from a display in one of the hallways. It was a heavy, clumsy sword compared to the weapons her father made, but there was something reassuring in its solidity. The demon Count Wolfsieg had summoned might be a fiend of the blackest chaos, but Rainer was flesh and blood. He could be killed if it came to that. She could see her father up ahead, following close behind the footman and maid who were guiding their group through the castle. Ottokar had thrown aside the rich coat he'd worn to dinner and had shifted the scabbard of his sword around so that he could draw it more easily with his left hand. On those occasions when he kept away from the bottle, the swordsmith was blindingly fast. This was such an occasion. She couldn't remember ever seeing him with such intense focus, such steely determination in his eyes. Magda started forwards to join her father, but the soft touch of Inga's hand on her shoulder held her back.
Leave him, her mother said. He wants to find Rainer first, so that if anything happens, we'll have time to get away. He has to know that I wouldn't leave him, Magda said.
She gestured back to the rest of their group. Hartman already looked ready to bolt, with or without his family. It was evident from the way the Senths carried the weapons they'd taken from the suits of armour in the hall that none of them knew how or cared to use them.
Somebody has to help.
A sad smile appeared on Inga's face.
I think he's depending on me to make you leave.
She leaned on the spear she'd armed herself with.
There isn't much trust between us. All of that went away a very long time ago.
Was it when you were with Bruno Valkenhorst? Magda asked, thinking of the accusation the Count had made. Colour rushed into Inga's cheeks, anger flaring in her eyes. For a moment it seemed she wasn't going to answer. But then an air of defeat settled over her. No, not defeat.
but something Magda had thought Inga incapable of. Regret. Inga sighed. Bruno was long before I met your father, she said. I was dazzled by him, his dashing swagger, his boldness and bravery. I met him through Hagen. They were friends, you see, good friends. She scowled and shook her head. The Count was wrong. Bruno did not come between me and his son. Hagen did. He started to change, became obsessed with rebuilding the von Kurtzburg fortune. He was trying to measure up, to prove himself to Count Wolfsieg. He began to gamble, and then to take out loans to cover his losses. As his debts mounted, he sought to ease the turmoil in his mind. That's when Lothar Krebs and his vile potions must have taken hold of him. The man I had known, the Hagen who had courted me, started to vanish, replaced by this weak, miserable stranger I didn't know. So I sought comfort elsewhere. There was already a connection between myself and Bruno. It didn't last. Hagen discovered us. There was a fight between him and Bruno, a fight that Bruno won. Tears appeared in Inga's eyes as she recalled that long-ago scene. There was such a look on Hagen's face when Bruno knocked the sword from his hand. It was a look of ultimate loss, an expression that did not simply welcome death, but demanded it. He called on Bruno to kill him. I can still hear his terrible words. You have taken all that is valuable to me. Now take what I have no use for. Bruno refused and did his best to explain, but Hagen would hear none of it. The next day we learned he was dead. Even then we knew the Count's story was a lie, that Hagen had taken his own life. That knowledge killed the love between us. In less than a fortnight, we'd gone our separate ways. Does father know? Magda asked. Inga shrugged. I suspect he does. Perhaps not all the details, but enough to be close to the truth. There was an appeal in her gaze when she looked at Magda, begging her to understand. After Bruno and Hagen, I wasn't so demure as I had been. Ottokar was simply another man of the moment. Of no special... Magda's eyes widened with shock. Martha, you... I have remained with him many years now, Inga said, firmness in her voice. Neither of us would say there is any deep feeling between us. Whatever you may think of me, do not neglect to give your father his share. Then why do you stay? Magda demanded. Why perpetuate such a farce? Because... we have one thing in common, one thing that binds us as closely as though we were in the same skin. Inga nodded down the corridor to where Ottokar was peering into a room the footman had opened for him. The one trust we share between us. It's our love for you that keeps us together. That's why he trusts me to keep you safe. Magda frowned. Then neither of you understands me at all, she said. Before her mother could try to stop her, she marched down to the open door and slipped into the room Ottokar had entered. The footman stepped aside as Magda passed him. The room was long and narrow, dominated by a broad table that stood in its centre. High-backed chairs of copper and ash lined the walls. Racks of ivory balls hung above the chairs, each of them marked with a different rune. The table itself was pockmarked with little holes, each designed with the same runes. Magda was only vaguely familiar with the game of Maharal, a pastime brought to Ravensback by settlers from Azir. She was certain, however, that there shouldn't be a large, cloth-draped mass stretched across the centre of the game table. Ottokar stood beside it, his hand closed about his sword.
"Pull back the sheet," he said.
He blinked in surprise when he saw Magda instead of the footman come forwards to carry out the order. Magda didn't give Ottokar the chance to send her back. Her fingers closed on the edge of the sheet and whipped it back.
she gasped at what was revealed. Count Wulfsig's body, his throat slashed so deeply that she could see bone.
The servants said this was where they took their master, Ottokar said.
His gaze was sharp when he looked at Magda.
What would you have done if it was Reiner under there? If the demon had chosen this spot to hide?
What would you have done? Magda threw the question back at him. She pointed at the footman, who had withdrawn into the hall and was peeking in through the doorway. I doubt he'd have been any help. She saw the frustration in her father's face as he struggled to refute her logic.
Well, it's obvious Reiner isn't hiding here, Ottokar decided after looking around the room.
Magda didn't respond. Instead, she went back to the game table and took a closer look at the corpse. Something was wrong. It took her a moment to realise what. When she did, she reached across the table and pushed the Count's body, trying to prop it up on its side.
Whatever are you doing?
Inga asked as she walked into the room. Hartmann and his family chased after her like a string of ducklings. Once they spotted the corpse, however, they decided to linger near the doorway.
You'll have to ask your daughter, Ottokar retorted. I can't see what's provoked her.
Magda turned and faced her parents. That weird knife he used to cut his throat, she said. They took it away with him, but it isn't here.
You must be mistaken, then, Hartmann suggested. I think I remember seeing it in the dining hall.
No, Magda's right, Inga said. The valets did take the knife when they removed the body. Then that means someone's been here. Magda tapped her fingers on the table. Someone came here and took the knife.
The demon, Inga shuddered, her voice low. It was here.
It came for the knife.
Ottokar shook his head.
What would a demon want with a knife? There's been plenty of opportunity for almost anyone to slip in here and take it.
But the same question. Why would someone want it? Magda asked. Before anyone could offer an answer, Siguna Senth cried out. Everyone turned to see her waving frantically and pointing out into the hallway.
The servants! Siguna yelled. They're gone! Oh, they've left us!
Birnga swung the huge mace against the lock, battering its mechanism with all the strength he could muster. He could feel the oak door shudder under the impact, but it stubbornly held fast.
These treacherous dogs are getting away! Rold shouted.
Birnga didn't waste breath snapping back at the Baron. None of them should have taken their eyes off Goswin and the valets. Rold's presumption made it impossible for him to consider that the servants might be anything but servile, but the rest of them should have known better. Even Hiltruder hadn't let her noble rank dull her common sense, but Birnga knew he'd let his own wariness be lulled by Rold's assumption of authority. It was a mistake he would never have made under other conditions.
A few more hits should break it,
Birnga said as he smashed the lock again. Bruno stood nearby with his sword unsheathed, ready to lunge out into the corridor. Rold had a blade of his own, a rakish thing he'd claimed from a crystal case in one of the hallways. Hiltruder and Liebgarde had only a couple of knives, and accepting even that much weaponry had required harsh words from Bruno.
They must be mad, Hiltruder said, leading us into this conservatory and then locking the door behind us.
Bruno shook his head.
Not so mad if there's another way out of Murghast.
Rold sneered at the idea.
They would be fools then. Surely they know they would be richly rewarded if they got us out of this godforsaken castle.
Goswin probably knows a lot about what the Count was up to, Bruno said. If he took any of us out of here, he might be taking the demon along too. Whatever you paid him, a dead man couldn't spend it.
The lock shuddered as Birnga smashed it again. The door groaned in its iron frame. He stepped back and brought his shoulder slamming into its panels. What was left of the lock flew apart, bouncing across the tile floor. Birnga burst out into the hallway. He thought he heard someone running down the stairs at the far end of the corridor.
Someone went down that way, he told his father as Bruno joined him in the hall.
It could be another trick, Bruno said.
He glanced down the dark stretch of passageway that led away from the stairs.
If we argue, they'll get away, Berger said.
He dashed off towards the stairs while his father shouted back to the von Wernhors and started for the darkened passage. Berger didn't know if Roald and his family would follow either of them, but he didn't have time to think about it. The retreating footfalls were growing fainter with every heartbeat. When he reached the stairs, he plunged down them with reckless speed, springing down the spiral with bold leaps. He could hear the footsteps growing quicker. Those he was chasing knew they were being pursued. Berger hurtled around the last turn of the winding staircase and landed in a crouch on the marble floor. He spun around in the direction he had heard the footsteps. A glimpse of a valet rushing into a hallway was all he needed. From his crouch, he threw himself forwards and sprinted after the servant. The flicker of candlelight illuminated the narrow corridor down which Berger chased the valet. He was just able to keep the man in sight. When he turned a corner into another passageway, here too there were candles lighting the way. Surely Goswin and the valets had not taken the time to light them all. It dawned on him that the other servants must also be involved. Most of the maids had not been delegated to the search parties. If Goswin had confided in them, they might have gone ahead and ensured the escape route was lit up for the majordomo whenever he could slip away. Perhaps the servants in the other search parties had done the same. The valet threw open a huge blackwood door, its panels carved with the figures of knights and dragons. He turned to slam it shut in Berger's face, but must have decided his pursuer was too close. The servant spun back around and ran away. Berger flung himself past the open door, heedless of the threat of ambush. No enemy lay in wait for him. The only sign of life was the fleeing valet. The servant was darting around crystal-fronted display cases and magnificently decorated suits of armour. The bestial shadows of crouching lash wolves and snarling frost bears leered in stuffed savagery. Overhead, the preserved pinions of a reptilian ripperhawk hung from the ceiling on golden chains. The valet's retreat led through the trophy hall of the von Kurtbergs. At every turn was exhibited the glories and triumphs of Count Wulfsieg's predecessors. The valet began tearing at the displays he passed. He knocked over suits of armour and upended crystal cases of ancient rings and sacred awards, anything he could throw into the path of his pursuer. But whatever he tried, Berger kept on his tail and steadily closed the distance between them. Finally, the man summoned a last burst of speed and rushed at a massive standard that covered a stretch of the wall. He grabbed at the lower edge of the cloth and flipped it away. There was an open doorway behind the standard. Berger drove in after the valet. There were stairs beyond the doorway, and from the dirt and dust that caked them, he guessed it was a stairwell that was seldom used. Likely some mechanism more substantial than the standard that curtained it off kept the entrance hidden normally. Now, of course, things were far from normal. The stairs were lost in darkness, the only light coming from the candles in the trophy room and a faint glow from below. Accustomed to working in much darker conditions, Berger was able to keep his footing on the dusty steps. The valet was not so fortunate. A loud crash sounded from ahead, followed by a painful outburst. Berger reached the servant as he recovered from his fall. Before the man could run off again, Berger grabbed him by his collar. The valet started to pull away, but it was not so dark in the stairway that he failed to see the mace in his captor's hand.
"So, tell me what this is all about," Berger demanded. He shook the valet.
The servant started to answer. Then an anguished scream rang out from below. The sound took both men by surprise, but it was the valet's panic that proved the greater. Before Berger realised what was happening, the man twisted out of his grasp and dove down the steps.
"Stop!"
Berger called out as he chased after the man. He was only a few paces behind the valet when he reached the bottom of the stairs.
there was a small landing with walls of iron and a doorway at the other end. It was towards this doorway the valet ran. Berger hurried after him. He was gaining on the servant when the man rushed through the doorway. Some instinct, the inner voice that sometimes warned him of danger when he was pilfering the house of a wealthy burgher, caused Berger to hang back for an instant just before the threshold. Beyond the doorway was a wide corridor. The valet was rushing across this, seeking a doorway on the other side. In his haste, it seemed the servant had missed the blood spattered about the floor and the gory drops that fell from the ceiling. Berger shouted a warning to the man, but if he heard, it was too late. The floor of the hall was tiled, a mosaic of carved stone blocks. The valet was a little more than halfway across when his foot landed on the wrong tile. There was a growl of moving gears and the rumble of machinery. The servant looked up and uttered a scream very like what they had heard in the stairway. From his angle outside the corridor, Berger could see the ceiling sliding back into the wall, revealing a higher roof, one composed of hundreds of long steel spikes. There were bodies impaled on those spikes, blood dripping from their wounds. Berger recognised all the victims as servants of the late Count Wolfsieg. The valet tried to run, but it was already too late. Like the descending foot of a gargant, the spike smashed down and transfixed him. As quickly as it had struck, the murderous roof withdrew back into its place above the corridor, and the false ceiling slid across to conceal its presence. Berger watched with ghastly appreciation the blood that dripped down through the cracks in the ceiling. He heard another sound, however, one that came from beyond the trapped corridor. Footsteps. Somebody had made it across. His stomach felt as though it was going to crawl up his throat and choke him when Berger started past the doorway and into the corridor. He studied the floor intently, especially the spot where the valet had triggered his doom. There were subtle variations in the tiles, but it was not the designs that he considered important. Some of them were slightly raised, a fraction of an inch higher than the others. One of these suspicious tiles was where the valet had been standing when the machinery started. Doubt assailed Berger. If he was wrong, he would be inviting a hideous death. But if he was right, he might have found another way out of the castle. The ancient von Kurtzbergs had shown the Stormcasts a secret way into Murghast. Perhaps this was it. The sound of someone exerting themselves from somewhere ahead goaded Berger on. It could be some of the servants striving to open a secret exit. Slowly, his pulse sounding like thunder in his ears, Berger walked towards the danger spot. He avoided the tile he had noted and took another step. There was no rumble of machinery. The ceiling remained in place, hiding the deadly spikes. His confidence bolstered, Berger pressed on. He carefully navigated the raised tiles and finally reached the further doorway. Here, he found a short landing. It made a sharp turn to the left and opened into a narrow, copper-floored hallway. Instantly, three things impressed themselves on Berger's senses. The first was the hideous heat that emanated from the glowing metal walls that flanked the hallway. The second was the abominable stench of burnt flesh that boiled off the charred bodies seared against those same walls. The third was the lone figure slowly creeping across the copper floor. Goswin reached the doorway at the other side while Berger watched. The majordomo turned around and gave him a malicious smile.
"None of you will leave this castle," he gloated. "The Count's revenge will claim all of you."
Berger waved his mace at Goswin. "There's a way out," he said. "That's how you got these poor devils to follow you." He gestured at the charred bodies cooking on the heated walls.
"They were not agile enough," Goswin said. "Perhaps you can do better."
Berger knew Goswin was trying to coax him into something reckless. He wasn't about to play the majordomo's game. Warily, he put one foot out onto the copper floor. It waved and wobbled under his step. Far from being as solid as it appeared, the floor was simply a thin sheet that warped under a person's weight and would toss them towards the red-hot walls. Goswin laughed when Bernga pulled his foot back.
Now you know how it works. Are you brave enough to try?
He laughed again.
I won't wait for you. I'm going to press ahead. Maybe I'll destroy the door once I'm away. Wouldn't that be amusing?
The majordomo slipped from view, still laughing at Bernga's predicament. He saw Goswin move to one side and judged there must be another doorway and another corridor hidden from his view. For a little while, he could still hear Goswin laughing. Then there was the snarl of some mechanism stirring to life. The laugh rose into a wail of terror that was abruptly silenced. Goswin had successfully navigated two of Count Wolfsieg's traps, but it was clear that there was at least a third. Some murderous implement the majordomo was either unaware of or had forgotten about. Either way, he wouldn't be leaving the castle. Bernger considered the fiendishness of the traps he had seen, and however many others stood between them and escape. The cruel choice left to them by the vengeful Count Wolfsieg. To brave the horrors of the castle's dungeons, or the demon that stalked its halls. Chapter 5. It was Sigun's suggestion that brought Magda's group to Murghast Chapel. Tall and narrow, if anything, the place had an even gloomier atmosphere than the rest of the castle. Dust caked the altar and covered the marble hammer that was bolted to the wall. Silvery cobwebs stretched across the beams overhead, fitfully reflecting the light from the gilded braziers Inga and Sigun ignited. The dried wood gave off a musty smell as it burned, somehow making the dereliction of the place even more pronounced. Magda prowled between the decrepit pews. They were carved from a silvery sort of wood that she had never seen before, with intricate engravings that depicted the great constellations and twinned-tailed comet of Sigmar. The legs of each bench were rendered into the clawed foot of Dracothian, and at each end of the pews was a carved support representing the winged dragon. Soft, velvet-covered padding stretched across the seats, and when she set her hand against them, she could feel the richness of the material even under the patina of grime. Windows opened out from either side of the altar, massive arches filled with panels of stained glass. The left side depicted gold-armoured stormcasts descending upon Chamon in a blast of lightning. A few skin-clad tribesmen were in the foreground as they cautiously approached the mighty knights. The right window showed one of the tribesmen standing with the stormcasts and pointing at a dark castle atop a craggy hill. Magda recognised the fortress as Murghast and reasoned that the tribesman must be the scion of the von Kurtbergs, who had aided the holy warriors in seizing the castle from the barbarians that held it. She was impressed by the attentive workmanship, the adoration of the artist evident in each line and figure. The effect was inspiring, even in darkness. She could only imagine how much more magnificent it must be with daylight streaming through it.
"This is certainly the best place to be," Hartman was telling his son and daughter. "Your mother is quite right. A demon would never dare enter a place sanctified to the God King."
The merchant and his children sat in one of the pews, poised so that they could see out through the iron gate that opened onto the chapel. The younger Senths appeared unconvinced by their father's assurances. From his nervousness and the way he was sweating, Hartman did not seem especially convinced either. It would appear Sigun had all the faith in their household. Magda watched Sigun for a moment as she walked through the chapel, lighting the braziers. She had a strange sort of confidence in her expression, given the circumstances. Frequently, she would pause to look up at the altar and the hammer suspended above it. It was easy enough to guess the source of her strength. Faith in Sigmar's power. The conviction that all things happened in accordance with the God-King's design. That kind of faith was something Magda had never known. It wasn't that she didn't believe in Sigmar's power or that she failed to venerate him. It was simply an appreciation of the cold fact that Sigmar didn't rule alone. There were other gods, some of them dire and baleful. They too had their domains and their influence upon the lives of mortals. How far the protection of one god could extend into the dominion of another was a puzzle scholars and priests tirelessly debated, without reaching a consensus. If such learned people couldn't resolve such a question, who was Magda to believe she had the answers? Often she had met Kluger in temples and shrines devoted to Sigmar. This chapel felt different. Certainly all the expected holy designs were here, the images of the hammer and the comet, the sacred appeals to Sigmar carved in stone above the nave. But there was something absent, something that wasn't seen but rather felt, a feeling of welcome and protection that simply wasn't here. Magda shuddered when she considered that absence. Was it something about this place, or was it something else? Something inside her. She had eaten the profaned food and thereby drawn herself into the mark of Khorne. Did that mean she was now corrupt? Irrevocably damned? Did the chapel feel different to her because she had fallen outside Sigmar's domain? She wished Kluger were here. He would know the answers. A feeling of horror coursed through Magda. Kluger would know, but what would he know? What if the answer was indeed that she was irrevocably damned, doomed to be consumed by chaos, to fall into the infernal grasp of Khorne? What would Kluger do then? She had often heard him describe the severity of his vocation, the harsh lengths to which the Order of Azir had to go to protect people from the dark gods. The witch hunters could permit no trace of corruption to escape. Perhaps that now meant Magda. Suddenly she hoped nobody got word to Kluger. It was terrible enough to think about the demon, but it was even worse to think Kluger might be the one who had to kill her. Magda moved across the chapel to join Inga. She needed someone to talk to get her mind away from the grim fears she had started to dwell on. Her father had gone to the parlour to bring Saskia and Abraham back to the chapel. She would have preferred to talk to him. Inga was less than sympathetic to her relationship with Kluger. Before, Magda had always imagined Inga's reservations to be a reflection of her own unrealised social ambitions. Now, she wasn't so sure. She'd had to rethink several of her preconceptions about her parents this night. Maybe her mother's reservations had more to do with Kluger's being a witch hunter, a man to be feared as well as respected. A man who would suffer no evil, even for the sake of those who loved him. Inga had left the last two braziers on the right side of the chapel unlit. When Magda walked over to her, she was kneeling beside a marble sarcophagus. The cover was sculpted into the life-size image of a young man with his hands crossed over his chest. The face was quite vividly depicted, and the resemblance to Count Wulfsig left Magda in no doubt whose remains were within. "I always suspected," Inga said when she sensed her daughter standing beside her. "I never bothered to find out for sure. Perhaps I was afraid to." Magda took Inga's hand in her own. "Would it have changed anything? What good would it have done to know how Hagen died?" Inga set her other hand on the cold stone. "Maybe nothing. Maybe everything." She turned and looked at the carved face. "That was how he looked before. Before the decline. Strong but sensitive. Always with a kind of hidden smile he tried to restrain until he had no choice but to release it in an absurd grin. He was so vibrant. So determined. He had to succeed on his own, you see. He was too proud of his heritage to merely accept a legacy. He felt compelled to build his own. Do you know he refused a commission in the Free Guild? As the Count's son, he had no business marching with the rank and file, but he did. That was the kind of man he was. A sad smile pulled at Inga's face. I think that was why he was so set on having me. Not some lady from the noble houses, coaxed and groomed by the Count's influence. He wanted someone he felt he had earned on his own. Had won through his